protecting your work with copyrights, what DPI is the best for print, and we fall down a couple really deep rat holes, all on this episode of Webcomics Weekly. Number three.
This time around. On this end, anyway.
I hope someone does a podcasting weekly so we can learn how to get this thing down, Pat.
Let's actually make that the very first part of this podcast.
What?
How to make this, how we're setting it up. Partly for our edification.
All right.
Because we forget every time.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you mean.
Are we recording?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, here we go. We're using Skype. We all are dialed in. And I've got the mixer. I've got the USB plug into my machine.
And I'm recording locally on my computer.
You're using the line out.
Using Audio Companion.
All right. Well, I think that's how we do it. Hey, do you guys hear echoes is the question?
I do, but it's less important to that than if you getting a good recording.
All right. Well, so long as it's not distracting.
Dave gets the short end of the stick every podcast for the audio.
I don't understand it.
But it's just so that we can, because it sounds great. On our end.
It'll be great. People are going to love it.
Somewhere between Texas and Alexis, it goes from really high-end fiber optic to like a 40-mile stretch of copper, and then goes back to
It actually goes to Victrola at some point.
They got a small guy going, a lot of pass this message along. Got cut, says hello. A
lot of packets today. Very busy. So let's start.
So what's new in the week of webcomics?
What happened this week?
What's going on? Let's introduce everybody in case it's their first time listening. Hailing from the frigid tundra of Philadelphia, it's Brad Geiger of Evil Inc.
Hello.
Hearing horrible...
I'm kind of losing my voice a little bit over here.
Oh, okay. Suffering from horrible pops and buzzes over in California is Smilin' Dave Kellett of Sheldon Comics.
I like how I'm Smilin' Dave Kellett.
Smilin' Dave, Gentleman Dave.
Directly across the desk from me, with an impressive set of headphones on, is devilish Christopher Straub with his Starslip Crisis strip.
Could be. That's my tag.
Everybody needs a tag. And then I am Scott Kurtz from PvP Online.
Okay, give us your tag.
What's my tag?
Yeah.
Huggable.
Ain't I a stinker?
Ain't I a stinker? Wah,
wah. Wah, wah. If no one has anything directly they want to talk about, I can save us because I've gotten a ton of email.
I also have a lot of emails. And you're not on that... I don't think you're on that forward to the – because I have an email address. If you want to write us an email, a question, by the way, listeners, go to halfpixel.com/ww, and the email is right there.
I didn't know that.
The email is actually ww@halfpixel.com, and that's where I'm getting questions. So we have a rudimentary site.
Sweet.
And you can subscribe to the podcast there too.
So –
Chris, can we get all of us on that forward for the email? Because I'd love to be able to ruminate on questions during the week.
Oh, sure. I'll set that up after we're done.
Awesome. So, Chris, do you want to read a question? I have a guy here that sent us 12 questions. I am not kidding.
Wow.
And they're all pretty good.
Wow. That's 12 shows right there.
This is from Danny.
Yeah, maybe go for it because there's maybe six here, but I'm sure they're all...
Okay, question number one. Have you run into any legal problems with creating a webcomic, like copyright issues and other strips? Does everyone know how to copyright their comic? Because I got to tell you.
It's confusing and it's scary.
It is very.
When you worry about it. I don't worry about it.
Well, at the risk of exposing my ignorance, I've always kind of gone along the lines that copywriting happens, it can happen kind of informally. You put the copyright notice on your comic, which is the C inside of the circle, year and your name. I also insert all rights reserved.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will, or a lot of sources that I've read will say, once it's out there, once the ink is dry on the comic, you own the copyright. You own the right to make a copy of that. But that doesn't necessarily mean you've got full legal rights to it.
My understanding – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brad.
Go ahead. That's where trademark comes in. You can trademark certain things and certain images. You can trademark your logo. You can trademark, the title of your strip. And that has a whole lot more ironclad legal standing. However, it's a very expensive process.
My understanding was that just as the creator of something, you own it right away, and that's secured copyright. But in court, the onus of the proof of ownership is on you. But when you register your copyright with the government, and now it's registered copyright, the proof lies with the government.
But, yeah, if I remember correctly with copyright, there's three different levels of copyright in the U.S., and obviously this is going to be different internationally, is that there's copyright at the moment of creation. So literally, if you are creating – let's say I'm drawing an image. As soon as it's on that paper and I've signed it, that is at the most basic level, a level of copyright. And then the next level of copyright is when it's out in public with a notice of copyright placed next to it. So, for example, Brad's thing when he says Evil Ink copyright, you know, or this image copyright Brad Geiger.
Right.
And then the third level is, and this is the most protected, is when you physically send in, and I think it's either $50 or $75 per image to copyright that image.
Yes.
And then trademark, entirely differently, is set up specifically for mostly for text-based words used in trade. So it's basically it's separate from an artistic statement. It's a business statement or title or word or in some cases a service mark that you use in business.
See, I thought that the trademark, if you copyright, the only things you can copyright are existing images. So I could copyright all of my strips, and they are, and I could copyright my book or the contents of my book, but I cannot copyright Vanderbeam. I cannot copyright.
Yes, you can.
You can copyright him, you trademark him?
You can copyright the image. You can copyright the image.
Yes, I can copyright his image, but if somebody used him differently, not my image, then that's not my copyright.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, look. You can – copyright is conceptual, and a trademark is service-based.
Define.
They changed the copyright law back in the late 90s, right, or early 90s, where the minute you create something original, you automatically own the copyright to it. It's not – it used to be where if you create – like let's say I created a cartoon about a teddy bear that was original and I didn't get to the copyright office before someone else who saw it, then they could beat me to it.
Yeah.
But they changed the law to where the minute you create it, you own the copyright to it. You don't. The burden of proof is not on you. Obviously you have to show that you created it first, but no one can trick you out of your copyright or
– Well, yeah. That's what I mean is that – and that's why I think secured – or just the act of putting copyright on your work. If you have a glut
of work – Yes, that's all you need to
do. If you have 5 years of work and this other guy has only a week of work and he's like, I made it up. And you're like, I did 5 years of work.
You can take your project and submit it to the Library of Congress for an official copyright and spend $20. It used to be that was the only way to state that you had a copyright. But now all it is just another method for you to prove that you did it. Right. But copyrights never have to be renewed or anything. It used to be you had to renew it every year or something like that. But they don't. If you created it, you own it. That's what everybody's fighting right now because people are saying, look, Mickey Mouse and all this stuff it should be public domain soon. Walt Disney's been dead for more than 75 years, and Disney keeps fighting to push the date further and further back so they can keep ownership of it so they can't go into the public domain.
Yeah.
But a trademark or a copyright is conceptual. Starship Crisis is an original product, original concept. You own the copyright to it.
Right.
Now, a trademark is service-oriented, and it has to be maintained. It has to be defended. Otherwise, you can lose it.
Right.
Because, like, for example, that's why people get upset about the people at Xerox get upset about you saying, I'm going to Xerox it. They'll fight that.
As does Jacuzzi and Q-Tip for all that sort of stuff.
Right. So, because
people,
what'll,
it waters it down, basically.
Yeah, what'll happen is eventually someone could take it to court and say, look, this has become a generic term, and the judge will be like, you're right, they've never defended it, and the judge will rule that it's a generic term now, and then everyone will be able to put Q-tip on their packaging, and that really screws the Q-tip company.
And another important difference between copyright and trademark is if I draw a picture of, say, Arthur, the duck character in my strip, then my copyright extends to most mediums for that character design. But with a trademark, when I file for a trademark on Sheldon, say, trademark breaks down into a class system of use, because what the trademark system says is, look, you can't own the word orange, but if you have a cell phone company called Orange, you can trademark the word orange for use on cell phones, or you can trademark the word Apple for use on computers and electronics. But there can be an Apple Plumbing in Detroit that also owns the trademark for plumbing and plumbing-based services.
Yeah.
And Apple owns it.
It also breaks down to locale, too, you know?
Sometimes, you can have a regional, I think it's called a Commonwealth trademark, that basically, if you've been using it in Massachusetts for 100 years, well, then that's your Massachusetts trademark, you know?
That's why the Beatles were pissed off at Apple.
Right, because...
Well, that's a much longer and complicated trademark.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the way I understand it.
So that's good.
But you know what we should do, and I actually think this would be a good service, is if there is a reader of one of our four comic strips or a listener of Webcomics Weekly that is a lawyer that specializes in IP content, it would be wonderful to have them on and to settle some of these issues that cartoonists are constantly talking to them.
It would be good.
And while we have the chance, let's dispel one of the myths. In fact, I think I was with you guys. Maybe this was Seattle. Somebody said that they had heard that if they package their work up or a copy of their work and mail it to themselves, registered mail, and left the envelope sealed, then that was proof of copyright.
No.
Do you guys remember that?
It used to be called the poor man's copyright. It was that you took your idea, you put it in an envelope, you sent it to yourself, registered mail, and you never opened the envelope, and it was proof that at this date at least you own the copyright.
And the idea there is, like, for example, if I draw a new character today that's a snake with a cute little bow on his head, no one has ever seen it. It just sits on my desk. Yet by U.S. law, I own the copyright on that snake with that bow. But what the mailing does and what putting it out in public with a copyright notice on it does, and then later on filing with the copyright, it creates this trail of provability that I have created this thing, or this trail of ownership. And so I think that poor man's copyright is basically one way that in a court system, in a lawsuit, you could say, look, here's a package sealed. Let's open it right now that's gone through the mail. You know, and so basically that's the idea, to fight it in a court system if you have to.
Mm.
But,
yeah,
but
I remember discussing that, and that one would be a tough one, it would seem to me. But
Wow, you know, I'm looking for it now. There used to be a whole website about this. There was a website that was specifically designed for providing information about this.
I would think a better version now would be to just put it up on a website with a copyright notice that the Wayback Machine could then refer to at some point, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think with us it's a little easier now because we've printed books and there's proof and there's stuff out there.
That's
in stores.
That's what I'm saying, is that if you don't have a registered copyright, at least and somebody shows up and steals your work, you can say, look, I've got drawings at my house. I've got years and years of concepts
and again,
sketches.
This is nothing. This is these are no magical documents that protect you 100%. Anyone can make an argument. All you're doing is aiding yourself if you're ever forced to make the argument.
Right.
Right.
And remember, too, that all of this is useless if you're fighting a large enough corporation with the legal funds to outspend it.
Well, that's anywhere.
There's a reason why Superboy is still being fought over in court, even though Superman's been settled. And there's a reason why, you know, I mean, because all of this, if you're fighting a corporation that has enough funding for a legal fight, you can just be outspent, basically. So,
right.
No, that's true. And that's why they were saying that on the trademark issue of the term superhero, that's jointly owned by Marvel and DC. A lot of people have always maintained that if a group would just challenge them on it, that there's no way that would stand up in court. That superhero is specific to them and unique to them. There's no way to prove that superhero is not a generic term. It is such a generic term. But who's going to fight?
Right.
Who's going to fight Warner Brothers on that?
A group with very deep pockets.
The only companies that would even be worthwhile to their basic core business would be either Image or McFarlane or those guys, and they just don't want to do it.
It's not worth doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Because for Marvel and DC, they're making so much money on the use of that term across medium that they're willing to spend on it.
And I think another question as far as legal issues are concerned that I'm more concerned about, not necessarily protecting my own intellectual property because I feel pretty protected, but, you know, I do a lot of referencing, and I wonder sometimes if that's going to get me in trouble. I mean, it's a running gag that my characters own the real General Lee and the real Back to the Future car, and those are pop culture references, but I kind of push that sometimes.
For what? Oh, for that?
You're not supposed to do that. Like, for example, you're not supposed to have Brent say to Cole, hey, I'm going to get a Diet Coke. I'll be right back. You're supposed to say a Diet Soda.
Yeah.
Or if you do say Diet Coke, you're supposed to put it in quotes to at least acknowledge that that is a trademark.
With a trademark beneath and a notice.
No, you don't necessarily have to use the trademark because the onus is not on you to protect their trademark. You just have to acknowledge that you know that it's a trademark, you know? Or at least that's what the head IP attorney at Mattel told me once.
I want to have a legal form stapled to every newspaper that my strip will appear in that says that I'm using Diet Coke in an appropriate manner.
Yeah.
And that it's refreshing. That was a good question.
Well, let's go on to the next question.
All right. I'm skimming through some of them because they're... Some of them are double looping.
So many good ones. So many good ones
to choose
from.
But
you know
from.
What? Actually, to go back onto the next question for one second, one thing that I think some cartoonists worry too much about when they're starting out, because I've, you know, in the same vein of cartoonists that have called us or emailed us and said, hey, how do I get my store going? I've got three strips down. And you're like, wait a minute. Is that I've had men and women email me and be like, hey, I've got three strips down and I'm very worried about my copyright. And my thinking is that's not the time to worry about your copyright. You know, it's why don't you get 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 done and then start to worry about it.
Yeah.
Oh, while we're coming back to this, one quick thing that somebody threw at me that I thought was it sounded good, at least, was on your logo when you get to the point where you're putting your website up or you're printing your book, to put the TM on your logo, even if you haven't officially filed for trademark, because as I was told, it shows intent. Have you guys heard that as well?
Yes,
yeah,
that is true.
Yeah.
TM means that you're intending to trademark it. R means you've registered it.
I never knew the difference.
Yeah.
Registration is the highest possible protection you can have from the U.S. Trademark and Patent Office.
And it's expensive. It's like $500 sometimes, I think.
It is.
And you have to maintain fees year over year. So it's not cheap.
And then, you know, it's only for one thing. So, like, if you see a registered trademark symbol on, like, a comic book, that doesn't count for movies or products or anything like that.
Right.
I mean,
on average, if you're a web cartoonist, the two trademark classes you want to file for are web use and print use, basically. And you just have to accept that if your stuff goes on T-shirts, if it goes on toys, if it goes on that. I mean, you can file for other things, but at the most basic level, if you're going to file, you probably want to file for electronic transmitted media and for books and print.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
No, those are good problems to have. When it's time for you to start making sure you've registered trademarks for your strip for all these different things, that means that... things are going well for you.
But I think if you're starting out, don't worry about it.
No.
Don't let that fear stop you from actually making the product, from making your work.
If you get really scared, wait till you've done, 6 months worth of strips, package them all up nicely in a little stapled stack of papers, and take $30 and send it to the Library of Congress and register it as a volume of your work. And copyright it. Then you can have a little piece of paper in your house that says you own the copyright to it and you'll feel better. Here's a good one because it's been a long time since I've done this. What is the etiquette if you decide to accept donations on your site? It sounds a little weird to me, but plenty of comics do it.
Oh.
Let's talk about donations because I think a lot of people, when they want to make money,
they think maybe that's an easy way
to
do it.
They go to the tip jar. How do you guys feel? Are donations still viable these days?
I was really surprised because when I went to that anime con in Houston, and I think that's a really different audience from ours. One of the first ways that they said to make money was donations, and that was never my experience. You know, I would make $2 every 3 months from donations. But they were saying, yeah, I would just, you know, I'd put a wallpaper up, and I'd say if I get over 500 this month, I'd do it, and it worked, and I was shocked. So I think if your audience is really tightly invested in your strip, if you've built one up, then I think maybe it could get you a couple $100 a month. But otherwise, I don't think it's worth doing.
Well, why would it hurt, though, is my question.
It doesn't hurt, but I'd rather put an ad in that space, something more proven. I used to have a donation button on StarSlip, but it never went anywhere. So I'd rather sell an ad space.
Is it okay to have a donation button if you're also putting up ads? I mean, his question is about etiquette. What is the etiquette on donations?
I don't have any problems if you've got a donation button up and you're doing ads. The bottom line is that you got to find what works with your audience. I know there are web comics out there with the tip jar, and they do amazing donations, or they get amazing donations. My experience has been much like Chris's. It just doesn't really take. But for me, in terms of etiquette, beyond the ad issue, I like to, if somebody's going to give me a tip, I like to give them something back, whether it's a desktop wallpaper or a piece of art or something that they can download once they've given the donation. I like to have a little bit of transaction going there, so it isn't a completely, you know, one-sided transaction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The one time I ever solicited for donations, I did two calendar wallpapers for computers, and even then, for some odd reason, and this is entirely a personal and subjective opinion, I wasn't elated about the donation experience. I'd rather, I don't know, earn it in a different way, if that makes sense. But as I say, it's entirely subjective. But I don't think it necessarily harms you in your reader's eyes. But for me, I would rather put forward a professionalism.
You'd rather not panhandle. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a different and it's entirely subjective. But I would much rather have an ad-supported site that folks want to support the strip by buying a piece of original art, or a book, or a T-shirt, or some buttons, or. I'm much more comfortable with that model because for me, they're getting something of value rather than just saying like, here you go, pretty, buy yourself a sandwich, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's got that. It's got that very PBS feel to it where it just feels like you're begging, and it feels like when you ask for donations, you're kind of at your last ditch effort to keep going. Yeah. And it's, you know, I don't know. I guess it does have an air of desperation about it.
You're right. It doesn't evince like a professionalism. That's what it is.
I think the only etiquette I can think of to tell this guy writing is that you have probably a small window of opportunity when you're first starting, where donations are really kind of okay. Kind of a let's help him get on his feet. But once you've been on your feet at least once, even if you kind of maybe lose some momentum and need donations again, you can't. I don't think you can go back and ask for them.
I don't
again.
Think it works anymore. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and you know what? You want to hold that as a card for the times where you really need it. For example, there was one Blank Label cartoonist that had a health problem in their family, and all the Blank Label cartoonists sort of elicited donations for him. And the genuine outpouring of people when they see a need can be amazing. And I think you want to hold on to that card should a true crisis ever arise. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And I think it works to varying degrees of success when there is a true crisis. So, you know, when there isn't one, I'm hard-pressed to think that it would work.
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of it, somebody said before, it depends on the audience. It also depends on the artist because if you ever notice if on a panhandler on a street or a busker in a metro station or something, I don't know why, but some people elicit a better response from me than others. And I'm like, here's $5. And the other guy's like, I'm not giving you a dollar. You're going to go buy some boons. But there's something about different artists that can probably, you know, elicit a bit different responses in terms of donations.
I think the etiquette question is really how would you ask anybody for money? Would you be like, hey, come on, I need some cash. What's wrong with you jerks? Come on. Or you can just make it small on your site and say donate. You know what I mean?
I think don't hold your work hostage.
Ubiquitous. Yeah. Even if you go to a place where the amount of service you get is somebody pouring you a cup of coffee, they still have a tip jar out. I mean, the tip jar is getting more and more accepted everywhere you go. I don't think there's a big deal about putting it out there, and just if somebody wants to put cash into it, then that's fine. And if not, that's also fine. But I think when you get to the point where you are actively soliciting donations, you're crossing a certain line there that you got to make sure your audience is going to be okay with.
Yeah. You know what's interesting too, because I always get this from European friends when they come to the U.S. They're like, oh, I don't know how to tip. You guys tip for everything. It's like someone scratches you and you have to tip them, you know. The one time that I ever solicited for donations with wallpapers, Americans would be like, here's a buck. Thanks for doing a great strip. And then Europeans would send me like 20 and 25 bucks, and I would have to refund through PayPal. Because I was like, I can't take 25 bucks from you for a wallpaper. Here's 24 bucks back. I can't do this.
Oh, I could take it.
They knew what they were doing.
They didn't accidentally press 25 instead of 2.
No, but I'm just saying Europeans are much more generous to artists when it comes to, like, thanks for your work. Here's 25 bucks, you know.
I'm moving.
I like your wallpaper, prego.
Hey.
Hey, 25 euros, not dollars.
Is better. The
ruble to dollar exchange rate is very good right now. Here is $25 for you.
Salute.
Russian oil is making much money. I'm sending you $25. I like the duck. It's very good.
Hey, what do you do? I give you 25 cents. Not good enough.
Dear favorite cartoonist of me. Dear favorite cartoonist of me. Could not send donation. Have no PayPal account. Please accept this package as gift. Open it up. Meh, goat.
I'm sending most of this goat back.
He is friend of me. Please take care. Please love him. I name him Skull.
Even better, it's like, I do not have money to give, but I am sending you attached PDF Excel file. And you open it up, it's like, hello, gift from Russian mob. We have taken over your computer.
We're not on you.
Hello.
You're going to like it.
You will now be sending out 100,000 spam emails a day. Thank you very much.
I had no idea that the Russian mob were wild and crazy guys.
I know. My accent totally changed there.
And in one sentence, Brad just left everybody under the age of 30.
That's true.
Yeah, way to go.
Thanks, oldie.
Yeah, thanks.
Why don't you make a Laurel and Hardy reference there, Brad? My comedy's right up there. There you go.
What's the password?
Swordfish.
Swordfish.
Remember when Stymie would look over to Spanky and that look he'd always have in his eyes, you know?
All right. The Algonquin Roundtable, we are not.
The Algonquin Roundtable. Nice round. no one got that except literature majors. All right.
So,
more questions.
This is a question that I got multiple times. So it seems like common knowledge, but I got asked multiple times, what is the common DPI output for print? What should they be saving as?
Oh.
300?
I think Brad probably is the best one to answer this one.
Yeah.
If you're doing black and white line art with no grays, 600 DPI is your minimum. And you can actually go up from there because you're going to end up saving it as a bitmap, most likely a bitmap TIFF. What happens when you save in bitmap format, all of your pixels are either 100% black or 100% white, and that will bring your file size down. If you've got a grayscale image or a full-color image, then you're talking 300 DPI minimum. And again, if you're printing in a process situation, remember you're always using CMYK. RGB is for screens only, like TV screen, computer monitors. And obviously on the web, it's 72 DPI straight across the board.
When I was doing PvP originally, before I used my Wacom tablet, I scanned all my strips in at 800 DPI, went straight bitmap. So there were no grays in the lines. But because the DPI is so high, it didn't look jagged, and that printed out nice and sharp. But now that I'm using the Wacom tablet, my lines feather out gray at the end, and I'm doing them at 300 DPI for the line, black and white line art. For some reason, my covers that are in color always look better at 400 DPI than 300.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but even Image Now is asking me to get their covers, the covers to them at 400 DPI minimum.
I used to do everything in 600 when I exported it because I'm using vector, but it doesn't matter. When you print it, it has to be the DPI. But I did not, for my new book, I think I did it at like 400 because some people were like, 300 should do. The strip size is pretty small in the book. You'll be okay. But I felt like 300, I don't like it. I'm going to do 400. I want to split the difference a little bit.
Well, the important thing to remember with DPI and resolution is that you can always go down without sacrificing image quality, but you can't go up without sacrificing physical size.
Yeah.
Okay? You can go up, but your image, unless you want to degrade the image, if you can go up, but your image is going to have to get physically smaller. But if you scan at a high enough resolution, you can come down until the cows come home, and you're going to be okay.
This question is really scaring me and making me feel uncomfortable.
Let me sum up this last discussion. If you're making a book, you can't take the images that are on your website and put them in the book. It doesn't work.
You know why it's making me uncomfortable is because I have not these comics that I've just sent up to Image for this next couple of months worth is all the first stuff I did with the Wacom tablet. And the nervousness I had when I switched over, when Mike over at Penny Arcade was like, you don't need to do this at 800 DPI. Do it on the Wacom at 300 or you'll be fine. Or 400, actually. It's 400 DPI.
Okay.
I'm terrified it's not going to print right. And I'm right now, as we talk, printing a strip out to that printer so I can look at it and remind myself that I'm okay.
400 DPI should still be very crisp.
Here it comes, Chris. Grab that for me.
All right.
I want like the fuzziest jag in a thing.
It's just a big blur. It's just a big blotch.
That's one thing I want to just sneak in there real quick before it slides by, the jaggy lines. People see the jaggy lines on their computer screens, and they get scared. You can have very jaggy lines. If you're operating at a print resolution of at 400, 500, 600 DPI, your line may look jaggy on the screen, and I keep telling people over and over, don't judge it from the screen. Do what Scott just did. Print it out and then judge it, preferably from a laser printer, but anything. Get it into physical aspect, and then you can really judge it.
Looks fine.
It looks great.
Looks great.
Oh, see? All right. I'm all right.
All right, so what's your scary...
I love that satisfaction. Oh, looks great. Wow. Talented man.
God, I did it. I did it.
I win. Funny cartoon, too.
I am good. This is quality cartooning.
I feel huge.
I don't know what you guys are producing, but I'm producing gold. Wow.
I love my inking a lot more now that I'm doing it digitally. I really do.
You're getting a lot more variance. Like there's a precision that it didn't come across.
I love your line quality.
Because I faked line width before with the Micron pens. You know, you can't.
You just mash.
You
it.
Get a little. Thickness by mashing down with the thicker points, but with the Wacom, I actually can press down and get a big.
You know what's funny is that I can't tell whether or not it's my Wacom that's crapping out because it's 7 years old, or it's that Flash CS3 is different than CS2. But I am not liking the Wacom.
Here's the plan.
And when I started drawing the way you draw on paper and kind of mashing the point down, I liked it.
Here's what we need to do. We need to set up a donation for Chris to get a new Wacom tablet.
Chris, here's what we need to do.
Hey, come on, guys. Buy me the big one.
When the podcast ends, I'm going to take this tablet and give it to you to plug in.
Oh, and just see.
If it's better, we're going to get our hair cut, grab some sushi, and head over and get you a new Wacom.
Thanks, Dad.
We're gonna get a haircut. You're gonna mow my lawn.
We're getting our haircut.
We are getting our haircut
because we're going to Baltimore this weekend.
We're getting Baltimore cuts.
And we've put it off.
That's adorable. You guys are going to go get a haircut.
Whoa! Wait a minute. Hold on a second. It's not adorable. It's just convenient.
Look, guys. Scott is going with me because I'm a little scared. So there's nothing wrong with that.
You're gonna help.
Do you guys go to a barber shop, or do you go to like
Mr. Rogers said that it wouldn't hurt, but I don't believe him.
What? Where are we going? This is the first time I've gone to this barber.
We're going to like a barber shop, and I've been there like three times, and I think that guy's awesome.
I usually go to like a Sports Clips and hate it.
I usually would go to Supercuts and super hate it. It was bad.
I would go to Sports Clip and Sports Hated.
Good old barbershop with an 80-year-old guy whose hands are shaky, you know, but as soon as he gets those scissors in there, he's like,
or I tell you. I sure like cutting
hair. He's talking
hair.
About local politics the whole time. That councilman is a jerk.
I had a guy within walking distance of my house that was exactly that, 85 years old, and he finally had to give it up, you know, because he finally decided to retire. And my hair hasn't looked right since.
Oh, I tell you, the news, you can't watch the news anymore. That senator caught in the bathroom. Is he gay? Is he not gay? Who cares? They all got hair.
Stop
I gotta cut
touching
them.
My hair.
And what's up with the blue stuff? They put the cone.
I was just going to go, all right, let's cut your hair. Comb out of the blue stuff.
It's Kool-Aid.
Okay,
I
so.
I wondered about that.
It's like cesium, you know? It's like some terrible material.
What a horrible rat hole we found ourselves in. Anyway, back to web comics.
No, pro tip. We used to do
that
on the Blank Label podcast.
What?
Pro tip.
Store your pens and brushes in that blue stuff.
Keep it clean. All right, what's your disturbing question?
Was disturbing was the DPI question because it made me suddenly in my head question my DPI.
Maybe this guy's got something.
I have a subject that I wanted to bring up for discussion. I feel like I'm dominating this podcast.
I just think you're taking a moderator role.
Oh, I had a topic I wanted to bring up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our final topic before we do our tips and tricks, I guess.
Meow.
How many of you guys – have we already discussed this? How many of you guys have picked up a webcomic collection and you just want to read the strips, but every strip has a detailed annotation of what the artist was thinking,
yes,
drinking that day, what they had for lunch, the yes. day they made that strip?
Yes. Bad.
And how do you feel about that?
No.
I do not like it.
I'm all alone over here.
Chris and I talked about this before once, I think. And for me, the whole idea of a comic strip, like any form of entertainment, is to lose yourself in it for however brief a period. And what artist notes do for me is immediately take me back out and make me aware of the artifice, you know? And there's something to be said for artist notes. Like if I'm reading the 30th anniversary edition of Calvin and Hobbes, I want to know what Watterson thought about X, Y, and Z. But when I'm reading the original Calvin and Hobbes collection, I just want to read Calvin and Hobbes. I don't want to read like, hey, today I made myself a cucumber sandwich. Pretty gross. I'll never do that again. Anyway, here's the strip, you know.
Yeah. I was almost going to put commentary in the Starslip Volume 1. I was going to because I thought of it as a value add. You know, just put it in there and it's something more that they haven't seen. But number one, it broke up the flow of the stories. And number two, I didn't have a lot to say on most of them, you know. This one I saw, I got the idea from watching CNN. All right, who cares?
I heard Brad in the background going, wait a minute, does that mean Brad has done this in his books and I've just put my foot in my mouth?
Yeah, well, you haven't put your foot in your mouth, and yes, I've done it in one of my books.
Oh.
No, but I think there's value to it.
Let me throw this out there.
Boy, do I hate
one,
it.
I've never had a whole – when I've been flipping through books that have had this annotation other than the one that I did, I've never had any problem skipping over the annotations if I didn't want to read them and then going back and reading the ones I wanted to read. But I do have to say I'm 100% with you guys in that – it's got to – those annotations have got to be written very, very well. You've got to put almost as much work into those as you did in writing the strips in the first place. And if you do really half-hearted, you know, just phone it in kind of notes, then, yeah, you're going to be distracting your readers and letting them down. But having said that, I only did it once, and I got such a lukewarm response that I haven't done it since. Mm. So I'm kind of not – really on the other side of the fence here, but I can see every now and again where some people and their audience, it might work.
Yeah. And there's ways to do it too. Like I think Chris on one of the Starslip books did value add commentaries where it was like 20 pages of strips and then a two pager where it was extra content or commentary.
I did like a cast page. Whenever a new character showed up, I just did a little paragraph about him and a picture of him.
But to me, if you have commentary on every page, it's like watching a DVD movie with the audio commentary on for the first time. And you're like, wait a minute. No, I want to watch the movie first.
Yeah.
And I think I know a good way to do it, if to make it a value added. Put the commentary on a website. And in the book, say, for commentary on the scripts you're reading,
That's a great lead into what I was about to say.
Oh.
I was going to say, I'm going to revamp my mailing list because I don't think there's a lot of interest in it. And it's also not, you can't sign up for it on my site right now. I didn't put it back up when I redesigned it. But I'm going to put commentary in there. But my general comment is, if your strip requires that you do a blog post with it and make commentary, then you didn't write it correctly. I don't want to have to read a blog entry like, I didn't get that strip. And then you're going in the blog, okay, I was at the mall with my friends, and we have this joke about football. And we always say it every time we meet at this one restaurant. And this is how it goes. And that's what I was trying to do in the strip up there. If you do that, then you did not. Then you need to tighten up your writing in the strip or not do that joke. Then it doesn't matter.
Right.
I make the exception of Penny Arcade because the essay that Jerry does is practically a completely different and additional content to the strip.
I don't think Penny Arcade has been a blog requirement for a while, though.
Yeah. I just like to read that essay.
Yeah. So, I want to dump out of this fast because I feel like I've insulted Brad.
Oh, no. You no insult at all.
Thank God that Brad's microphone can't pick up the sound of a tear falling out of a desk.
No, this is all stuff that, I mean, we've all experimented, you know, we've all done things that we're not so proud of, but, you know, this is mine. Yeah. What can I tell you?
Yeah, well, you know, this has a related topic that I think is actually really worthwhile to talk about, because some people who come to webcomics from a very print mindset can't wrap their minds around it. I'll get an email from a cartoonist who I think is trying to be helpful, and he'll say, hey, if you want to sell more books, you should just put 30 of your most recent strips up online, and then people will be forced to buy the books. Do you ever get that email?
Yeah.
What, say that again?
Oh, hide your archives?
Yeah, basically, the guy or girl will email me and be like, hey, I just found Sheldon. Great strip. Here's an idea that you should use to sell more books, which is put only the most recent 30 days of your strip up online, and then you'll sell tons of books with the years in the past.
I've thought about it.
Yeah, but would that work? I think, to me, that the whole idea of the strip online is almost a loss leader to get people emotionally connected to the strip.
Right.
I think the damage that you do to your reputation with your audience by going, okay, they were free, now they're not, is not worth the benefit you might see from the rest of it.
I've just considered it because I hate looking at my first year of strips.
Yeah, and that's a very different emotional issue. You know,
no, I think Dave's got it right on the head, though. You need a lot more than 30 strips to make an emotional connection with a comic strip, and you need an emotional connection before you can buy the book. So you're actually hurting your book sales by doing that, I think.
Yeah. You just have to accept as a cartoonist that when you put your cartoons online for free, only 10% of your audience is going to buy something, unless you have some weird audience that's like, oh, everything you do is gold. But, you know, only 10% of people at any given time are going to buy your stuff because, you know, 30% of them are college students without any cash. The other 20% are adults that have never bought anything online and they're scared to use their credit card. Another 20% just don't have the drive to buy your particular book for whatever reason. They like it, but they don't love it. So you're going to have that 10% that will support the strip. But without putting your full archives up there, you'll never have that full 100% audience. People will drift off. People will never get connected. People never will care about the strip.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people that come from a print background don't make that connection as to how that works. It's essentially the radio model of, if you were to combine a radio station with a record company, that's what a webcomic is. We're giving away comics just like a radio station would with songs for free. And it's ad-supported, but the money comes and the income comes from selling the record, which is the books and the T-shirts and the toys and all that sort of stuff.
That's an interesting parallel. I don't think I ever thought about that before.
Yeah, me neither.
But that's essentially what our business model is. It's a combination of the radio system and the record system, you know, or recording company system.
I'm starting to get the impression that most of the people that bought my comic book were people who didn't know it was online. And now over the course of the 3 to 4 years I've been at Image, most of those people have been converted to online readers. And so less and less of them are buying the book. So I really got to find a new way to get that book to a brand new market. Because
yeah,
talk
about being a victim of your own success.
Yeah. No, I really do feel that that's happening. And I've been a little afraid to make a big deal out of PvP's 10-year anniversary too. Although Ku kind of waylaid some of my fears on that last night. Just because it kind of like part of me wants to go, PvP's been around 10 years. 10-year anniversary, it's a big deal. Let's make it a celebration. Let's sell some hardcovers. Let's, you know. But part of me is like, don't tell people you've been around for 10 years. You're going to reveal that you're an old dinosaur. And it's, you know.
You can get an interview on NPR with with that lady if
yeah,
you announce that.
That's right. And then she can ask me, do you think there'll ever be other web comics?
We were listening
what?
To it was
what is this?
It was Pete Abrams of Sluggy Freelance. He did an interview for the 10-year anniversary of his strip on NPR, and we listened to it. It was like a 10-minute piece, and the woman is asking him, "Do you think that webcomics are the future? Do you think there will ever be other webcomics?" And it's "Wow, great! Thanks for research."
And Pete was like, "There are a lot of webcomics now." She's like, "Oh, I'll have to check them out."
No, you won't.
All right. Well, let's. We've been 46 minutes now. I think it's time for some tips and or tricks.
You got a stinger? Tips.
I'm going to make one and stick it in right now.
All right, great.
So pretend like you just heard a really awesome stinger.
Wow. That was sweet.
Scott Kurtz.
Nice. I'm multi-talented. I'm a Renaissance man.
And the thing you put in is just... Tips.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Wagana, wagana, wagana.
Hey,
or
I,
it's
I,
like,
I'm...
oh, go,
go ahead.
Up.
Dip.
Who's got a tip?
We should come up with a word for that in radio, where you're stepping all over each other. What is that called?
Stepping all over everybody.
Yes.
Being too polite.
All right, Brad, go. It's go time.
Something Chris said earlier made me think of this, and I'm just going to build on it because I think it's worth saying. Newsletters. We were talking before about how to build up your readership and how to convert, you know, regular readers into rabid fans. And this is one that I'm that Dave, you originally turned me on to, and that is building an email subscription-based newsletter. It's something that you can, every now and again, you put it out on a weekly or a monthly basis, and you talk about what's going on with the strip, what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe, you know, if you want to dole out a couple spoilers to any storylines you've got coming up, just anything you want to say to the, stuff that you would say to somebody if he was standing there at a comic convention, you know, something that you talk to your hardcore fans, and then people sign up, and it comes out through an email subscription on a semi-regular basis. It's a wonderful way for really kind of indoctrinating fans and for making announcements about new books and projects like that.
Yep, that's a great idea, Brad.
What do you use to...
Your idea, Dave.
I didn't mean that in the self-congratulatory way. Sorry.
How do you send out the emails? Because I have a friend that sent an email list out for his local con that he runs, and he got big trouble with his ISP. For sending out spam emails. What's the rules?
Right? No, I just put a little button on my strip that says, you know, send me your email, and I'll put it on the list, and import it into a list, and when I send them out, I send them all at the same time.
I think it has to be opt-in. He might have been just mailing everybody.
I gotcha.
Yeah. He probably got one or two complaints, and that was enough for the ISP to say, whoa.
Right.
Dave?
Okay, so my tip this week is actually one for Brad, or in the sense that, well, here, let me back up. Here's the tip. If you want to learn how to use backgrounds well, and I do not do this, a lot of times I have kind of static white background, which works from a for establishing a certain emotion. But if you want to learn how to use the backgrounds and camera angles well, read through the last 30, 40, 60 days of Evil Inc., Brad's comic strip, because Brad is so good at using interesting camera angles, interesting layouts, interesting backgrounds, and it's something to learn from. And I'm learning from Brad, and I say that in a humble sense, not in a jokey sense. Brad's backgrounds are supreme, and as a cartoonist, you could do worse than to learn from Brad on that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Wow.
I like that tip.
I knew it.
My tip is about line width, and if you want to, Brad Geiger's line width is phenomenal. And
okay, Scott, now you tell me why I'm great.
And then Chris goes, copyrights. Who needs them? Brad Geiger, that's who. And if you want to know how to put a copyright next to your signature, check out
Brad.
I
say, if you want to be a hit at cons, grow some facial hair. I've got some in my, because after my buddy Brad did it.
Now, is my tip the lamest thing ever? Because
No. Hey, Dave, in all seriousness, I think the best way to learn how to do something in cartooning is to look how another cartoonist does it and adopt it. I'm not joking. I mean,
where else are you going to learn it?
I mean, you can go to a bookstore and you can buy a book on perspective and you can learn perspective, and then you can learn how to draw perspective if you ever need to make a book on how to draw perspective. But I've always had a hard time taking the principles and precepts of art proper and applying them to cartooning, and it always helps me when I see another cartoonist that's done it, and then I can glean a little bit from it. I've been really admiring the work of Ben Caldwell lately, who's done a couple books on cartooning. I really enjoy his animated style. I was trying to adopt some of it. And I was doing a cover that required me to draw the a goat's face. And I remember that he had a goat's face in his book, and I went to see how he had structured the face, and I actually liked bits and pieces of what he had done better than what I was doing, but for the most part, I liked mine better. So I'm not saying to just copy someone else's work, but we learn by observing. That was just to support the fact that your tip wasn't lame, Dave.
Good.
So don't feel bad, Chris. What's your lame tip?
I got two lame tips this week.
Don't steal mine.
What was your tip? I wasn't even listening.
The one.
So my tip. I got two, and I'm only doing the other one because the first one actually was a lame tip. The very first, if you're worried about what archive software to use, the one that I've used for a long time, I don't use it anymore, but I started out with it and it was a workhorse, was actually the one that Keenspot used, and it was given away for free on their website. I don't know where you can find it now, but if you look up autokeenlight.cgi, you can find it. And that was the most versatile, and it's very small and it's Perl, so if you know Perl, you can mess with it. I don't like the ones that are all WordPress related or built into other engines related because I think it's too complex.
Did they offer that to everybody for free?
It's online. You can just find it.
Not just to
he's giving it away.
Keen Spot people?
Yeah.
Oh wow, cool.
He started giving it away in like 98.
Keen Light?
Auto Keen Light.
Auto Keen Light.
And it's light because it's not full featured like their regular one.
LITE.
And my other tip concerns if you have a four panel strip or you're writing them and you're early in the process of deciding on your format. And you have the jokes where it's like the two guys are talking and it's like, I went to the store yesterday. And then in the second panel, the guy says some non sequitur. And then the third panel, everybody's silent. And then the fourth panel is the other guy getting the zinger, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing that often, maybe you don't need that four panels. Maybe you should go to a three panel strip.
Oh, you're talking about me.
Am I? You jerk.
Why? I always have that. Pause, third panel pause.
I do it too. I'm saying if you do it more often than not, if that's the pacing of your strip, don't feel constrained to have four panels. You know,
I love crickets, how all the tips. Crickets. I love how all the tips and comments this episode has just put everyone at ill ease.
I feel great.
Lame? Did I put my foot in my mouth? Hey, is that about my strip? What's my DPI? Print this out.
These tips are hard because I don't think about them until we're actually doing the show.
I think Chris has a good point, and that is it, what he's actually saying is if you're doing it over and over and over and over again,
yeah,
maybe you're overusing it. It's a really powerful thing to use to suddenly ramp up the tension
it
in
is.
A four-panel strip.
It's a great device.
But I think what Chris is saying is right. If you see yourself doing it, you know, like three or four times a week, then maybe you got to look at what you're – because it's not perfect for every occasion.
Right.
Yeah, and I found myself trying to come up with another strip to do, and I'm wondering what format it should be, three-panel or four. I'm actually having a hard time writing for three. I can't think in three.
I have a hard time writing for four sometimes.
What, you want fewer or you want more?
No, I've been – I mean, most of my strips have been five panels. I feel like I don't have enough of I'm doing four.
Yeah.
This is interesting to me. Real quick, I want to know what you guys think. Around the room, what's harder to write, a single-panel comic or a multi-panel comic?
It's harder to write single panel.
Yeah, single is harder.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, I would agree. Unless, you know what, unless it's some weird lightning strike and I'm like, that's brilliant, bam, done, and, you know.
And I pretty much find most single panel comics to be pretty unfunny.
Yeah.
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 Well,
they can be.
Especially Brad's.
Cut to Brad putting down his pen on his drawing desk because he's working on a single panel.
Yeah, me too.
I don't like single panels.
Like, I was gonna put commentary in the next Courting Disaster
because
book.
Because it leads.
You just hear the crumpling of paper in the background.
Because it leads to that. It leads to that kind of one-liner humor, like time to slip out of these wet clothes and into a dry martini, you know. Anyway, and Brad does it, so who wants to do that?
Well, since he's doing it, there's no reason for anybody else to do it.
That's right.
You're just gonna blow it.
Degree.
Brad, you need to keep drawing those single panel strips because even if we don't like the jokes, we need more background examples.
That's right, and there's not a lot of text, so we can study it.
All right, it's time for Kurtz's tip, which I have to admit is actually Chris's tip because I had a problem yesterday and he solved it for me. He knew how to do this.
Oh, yeah.
So this is going to be such a lifesaver for so many of you. So get ready to kiss Chris virtually on the lips.
All righty.
I had a number of strips that I needed to turn into image. I've always done the production on my own books, but I found out when I was visiting Kirkman, I can just send them the strips. I can send them 40 strips, and they'll put it together in a book for me. So I needed to take 40 comic strips that were all multi-layered Photoshop folders or files and flatten them into flat TIFFs, save them as a TIFF. That means that's 40 times I have to open a file, 40 times I got to flatten it, save it as a TIFF, pick the folder to save it in, and I wanted it to automate. So in Photoshop, there's a thing called actions where you can tell it to record an action, click all the things you want to click, and then save it. And then all those clicks can be done with one button. But how do you do that across multiple files? Well, Chris taught me. You record your action, you do it once, and then you go to, in Photoshop.
You go to File.
File, Automate, Batch. And this wonderful menu pops up. You choose your action from your list of actions. You choose a source folder. You choose a destination folder. And then you hit go. And you just watch as Photoshop, like a happy robot, one by one opens all your files and does whatever you need done. So if you need to take a bunch of files and convert them to a JPEG, you can do it. If you're going to make a book and you need to flatten 100 strips, Photoshop will do it for you. Do not forget that automate feature. Record an action, and you can batch automate it.
That's a good one.
It is awesome.
And you can grab files from one folder and save them to a completely different folder. That's the best part.
You know what? Yep. That's true love.
That is the love of a good woman in the form of a Photoshop
tip. That's a staunch ally.
It is actually one of the most amazing time savers you could ever find in Photoshop. Because we were talking before about outputting for print and outputting for web. I actually output one Sheldon cartoon three different ways now, where it's one of them goes to a 72 DPI GIF for the web. One of them goes to a 300 DPI TIFF with a copyright and URL line for newspapers, and one goes as a 600 DPI TIFF with no copyright line for the book. And Photoshop as a batch makes that so easy. You can do it all. You know, I can do all 2,000 Sheldon strips in probably 30 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing. So great tip. Great tip.
Well, well, well. Thus wraps up another episode of the Algonquin Roundtable known as Webcomics Weekly. I'd like to thank our very own Dorothy Parker, Christopher Straub. You can find his strip at starslipcrisis.com.
Can't wait to see who I am.
Big ups to we'll make you Robert Benchley, humorous and actor.
Yeah, Benchley. Kellett. I was hoping for Benchley.
Oh, he wrote Jaws.
No, yeah. That's you can find Dave's work at sheldoncomic.com.
Comics.
Oh, sheldoncomics.com. Jeez, I'm going to fix that in post. And then you don't want to look at his writing for Single Panel Strip, but you definitely want to see his backgrounds. The let's see, we'll make you the George S. Kaufman of Webcomics Weekly, playwright and director, Brad Guiga. And you can find his work at evil-inc.com. I am.
Dude, you're out on your game. I'm going to do this next week. It's evil-comic.com.
Oh.
And your website is pxb at. What
Look,
the hell is it?
Stop.
CNN.com.
Chris.
Go there and check out his strip.
Let's just fix it in post. You seriously, you take over and do the ending part again.
All right, when we hang up.
No, do it now.
Oh, okay. Well, that wraps up another episode of Webcomics Weekly. Thanks to Dave Kellett of SheldonComics.com, Brad Geiger of Evil-Comic.com, Scott Kurtz of PvPOnline.com, and Chris Straub, that's me, I'm thinking myself, Starslip.com. So thanks for being here, gentlemen.
Now it's all fixed.
Now it feels better.
All right? It's not like everyone doesn't know who we are anyway. That's all for just patting our own backs.
Let's do it again. Dave, try it.
Dave,
give it a shot.
Go for it.
We're going to have it pre-recorded. For
I like it. Then we can.
You know
just
what we should do in the ultimate sign of lameness is run all of these.
I'm not editing a thing. I'm not editing a thing. This is going as is. You guys, go ahead, Dave.
You guys can all just stop listening at this point.
All right. Well, here we go. I'll turn on my radio announcer voice. Ready? All right. Thanks for another Webcomics Weekly. You've been tuning in to the Four Horsemen of the Comicsopolis. First up, Scott Kurtz of PvPOnline.com. Brad Guiguire of evil-comic.com, Chris Straub of starslip.com, and me, I'm Dave Kellett at sheldoncomics.com. We're sending out all our love and hugs from the internet.
Go like this.
Oh! Hey-o, pancakes!
Not good enough. Brad, you got to do it now.
All right, I'm going to do mine in my since we've already referenced NPR, and I love how NPR makes any topic sound like you're trying to explain quantum physics to the criminally insane. I'm going to do it in my NPR voice. I thank you once again for listening to the Webcomics Weekly. We are, as always, Scott Kurtz of PvPOnline.com, Christopher Straub of Starslip.com, Dave Kellett from SheldonComics.com, and I am, as always, Brad Geiger from evil-comic.com. Now stay tuned for Carl Castle and a look at the week's news.
Followed by
Clicking
World
Clack
Beat.
With Car Talk.
I sure do love talking
Those
in
Those wacky
NPR
Car Talk guys.
This is wonderful.
It is a great
This
voice.
Has been a great show tonight, wasn't it?
Sure, it certainly has.
I really liked it.
Your tip about
Don't forget, next week we'll be doing our subscription drive. We need to buy a new mixing board because ours is from 1974.
Your tip about the extra panel was delightful.
And I love the thing about the automation. That was just wonderful.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
It sure, certainly has saved me a lot of time.
I think it was a heartwarming show for everybody.
Yeah.
It certainly has been for me. I hope it was. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it.
I did, Scott. Thank you for that.
65 degrees at 219.
Okay, another episode of Webcomics Weekly has been wrought.
It's been hewn from stone.
Has been wrested from the fates and given back to the
All right, let's do a little musical out real quick, everybody. Webcomics Weekly.
Webcomics Weekly. Everybody loves us.
Dave.
I don't know what style or genre that was.
Not participating.
Dave was waiting was for like, the middle eight.
That was four homeless guys trying to harmonize.
If that was a TV show and Dave was just sitting there, it would have ended with, it would have cut to Dave and the music would have gone, bam, 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 lan, dan, wah, and Dave would have gone, giving a real unhappy face.
One arm in my side and another fist slowly shaking.
And then it would have gone, and then Steve J. Cannell would have gone,
Viacom.